When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I had to go about it, write it out, and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you. I had to fail, had to fall, just for what I did well. And there's some stories I can tell you.
It's the Final Word Daily. Adam Collins and Jeff Lemon for Westfield London, Westfield Stratford City. More extra, less ordinary. It's day 12 of the World Cup. And on this 12th day, Australia came again. They're on the board. Jeff, tell us about it in 30 seconds.
From the car park in Lucknow, Australia were sunk here at the ground today. They were in all sorts, 125 for none after Sri Lanka batted first. They were going to get pumped again, and then suddenly it all turned around. Yep, Kusal Perera made 78, and Pathum Nasanka made 61. That was about it. Asalanka, 25, was the next best score. Zampa came into it with four wickets. Cummins bowled beautifully. Stark picked up a couple, and it was all down to David Warner's fielding. I'll come back to that later. Australia chased it without too many troubles. They ended up five down. Maxwell blazing it at the end. Half century for Josh Inglis, and Manus Labuschagne made some runs, but I can't remember how many.
He did. Manus Labuschagne made 40 from 60 in that partnership of 87 with Inglis. Just to make sure of there was that little wobble courtesy of the bowling of Madusanka, who bowled beautifully, by the way. Madusanka was just outstanding with the
deserved
ball.
To mention.
Yeah. In the 30-second summary, took three wickets, three of the five for Sri Lanka. But Australia win with 88 balls to spare, five wickets down, which means they undo some of, maybe a lot of, the damage that was done to their net run rate in losing to India and South Africa the way they did across the first week of the tournament. But yeah, that was Mitchell Marsh giving them that head start. But the problem was the wickets falling around him, Warner and Smith falling in the same double wicket maiden. So there was a wobble, but through Marsh and Labuschagne and Inglis. And then later when the game was done and they were chasing net run rate, Maxwell 31 not out and Stoinis 20 not out. It was mission accomplished. But Jeff, let's go back to the fielding innings. They're none for 125, Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much you were sampling social media at the time. It just felt like the Australian public were ready to completely write off this mob. Sri Lanka were going to go on and make 300 plus. They were going to get rolled again. They were going to be zipping three, and that was that. Yep. It was time for, as I saw in my replies, the white ball reset, similar to what England did after the 2015 World Cup. And then Pat Cummins brings himself back into the attack. The catch in the deep, excellent bit of work from David Warner. A crucial catch. Running from, I think, from shade to light, but either way, it was one of those where it's harder than it looks, and Cummins with the short ball getting his back into it, getting to go one through the gate as well. Then Zampa, who started poorly, got into the game, got the stumps in play with those googlies, picks up four, turbocharges his own tournament, which felt like it was hanging on the edge at that point as well. So from where they were to where they got to, the collapse was 10 for 84, or if you prefer Richard Hadley figures, 9 for 52, or 6 for 31 after the rain and the sandstorm that followed. It was a wild couple of hours, but Australia got their shit together when they needed to, basically.
I don't think it was unreasonable to think that they were cooked, because they're 125 for none, Sri Lanka. You've got your next two players coming in, Kusal Mendes and Samara Vikrama, are both coming off hundreds in their last games and batted supremely. And you're thinking, well, okay, all they need to do is make probably 280 here, and that's going to be really, really difficult to chase down batting second based on what we saw against South Africa at the same ground the other night. And it wasn't just the scoreboard. It was the fact that when everything's going against you, everything goes against you, and you make bad decisions when you're under pressure. And so a lot of that came down to Mitchell Stark, first over of the day, gets one swinging in. It's missing the leg stump, and it's hitting the bat, and it pitched outside leg, but he got Pat Cummins to review it anyway. So they burned a review. And then Maxwell, so that's to the right-hander, to Nasanka, and then Maxwell traps Perera in front, the left-hander. Huge appeal. Rarely see Maxwell give it the full, like Nathan Lyon, spirit fingers and all the rest of it. Given not out by Joel Wilson, and they don't send it upstairs. And even at the time, I thought, well, if just even based on the appeal, a player doesn't appeal like that unless they're pretty sure it's going to be out. But because they've already wasted the other review, they're not game to use this review. It would have been out. It was three reds. He was on 24 at the time, I think, Perera. And then he starts smashing them around after that. And you're just thinking, okay, when a team keeps making bad decisions, then things are going to keep going against them. And that's why I put a lot of it down to David Warner in the deep. The fact that he was the one player who still caught his catches well against South Africa and met his usual standard in the field the other night. That top edge from Cummins, it's one of the things, like when you watch cricket at the ground versus watching it on TV, some of those outfield catches look easier on television than they actually are, because the amount, the foreshortening effect, it's not just Tony Gregg with the low catches, but it reduces the appearance of the amount of distance that a player has to cover.
Yep.
When that ball went up in the air at the ground, I was watching Warner and I was like, there is no way he can get there. He's too far away. He screamed across the turf. And he caught that one really well. And then, yeah, Cummins knocks over Pereira with that delivery that I'm sure you'll want to talk about after this. But it's the second catch, the one off Zampa, that's even harder for Warner. Similar position. He has further to come around. He hits the ground harder. His knee digs into the turf. He smashes into the ground, rolls over about three times, genuinely hurt himself, and hung on to the catch. There are so many players out there who would have let that catch go. And I just thought it was that commitment, that body on the line stuff, and the skill and being able to hit his standard, that's what lifts Australia. And then after that they go, okay, we can do this, we're in this game at 3 weeks.
There's a really famous instance in a night competition at VFL Park many years ago where a defender called Robert Klomp was given best on ground for having had seven touches because he defended so well. I'm not saying that David Warner is my three votes in the Brownlow tonight, to extend the awkward analogy here, but he's getting a vote from me. You know, Zampa's best on for what he does, Mitch Marsh for what he does, and you know, it kind of speaks for itself, not to neglect Inglis in that conversation either, who played a really important innings that we'll come to in a moment. But if not for Warner taking those catches when he did, I'm not sure whether the game opens up the way that it does. And look, Cummins, to his credit...
The rest doesn't start.
And Cummins, to his credit, makes some good calls from that juncture. So he gets himself back on. I reckon that's the quickest Cummins has bowled in the tournament. I'm not sure whether the data will back that up, but it felt like he was bowling faster, that he knew that this was really important. Changes his angle around the wicket to Kusal Pereira. Extra movement, albeit off the inside edge, but takes out the stumps. The big response from him. I reckon that it didn't offset the poor decision on the reviews, but it felt like, you know, he was back at an even playing field. You know, the two wickets for him, because you're right, that Stark review was a nonsense. It felt like it was missing leg live, and the fact that Stark has the seniority to command that of the captain, I guess you see that with older fast bowlers. Stuart Broad did it all the time towards the end of his career. If you're a quick and you think it's out, you're probably getting the review going your way with the captain. But that did clearly inform the decision not to go up with Maxwell. I actually blamed Inglis for that, because Inglis didn't appeal. He just wheeled away to collect the ball and didn't go up with Maxwell. He gave it the double appeal. Joel Wilson should have given it out on the field. It was clearly hitting leg stump, but that's the way I suppose these things go. Body language of the keeper feeding into all of that. But yeah, Cummins gets it right when he needs to. Like, the way I see it is it was like so close to teetering, so close to getting to a point of no return for them in this game and in this tournament. They had to be shocked into action, and something about the way Warner did that got them right as they needed to be. I mean, Zampa didn't start well. 4 for 47, a couple of those googlies were absolutely perfect, and that's where Zampa's so good, bringing the stumps into play and keeping them there all day long. Mm. But, you know, he starts with a half tracker with no real venom in it. I think he's conceded 25 runs in his first three overs. He said himself on the Man of the Match interview that he had a back spasm before play, and that's causing him some grief more generally. He wanted to get that out there when answering the first question. But, you know, got into the game, the great catch in the deep from Warner, couple of leg before decisions which are plumb in front, and now Zampa's in the tournament. Maxwell bowls well again. Stark takes a couple of wickets to help finish off the tail in the way that Stark does so well. Cummins plays his role, and suddenly, you know, you can convince yourself they've had a really good day, and they did from the point of none for 125, but it could have easily gone the other way, and I think they'll be very mindful of that.
Yeah, they did eventually once things got going. Stark hitting the stumps is important, and Dhananjaya De Silva's an important player as well. Got one through him. Zampa with the LBs, got Joel Wilson giving them, you know, which initially Joel, the first Joel, the Angels said no, but the second, third and fourth Joels, I like the way that Joel sort of points flat, he like points at the dressing room effectively today. It was like, off you go, that's where you're going. It's like he's giving them a send off. And so he started giving wickets. And then there was Cummins with the run out as well, don't miss that.
Yeah, absolutely.
The chip down. Was it Chamaka Karunaratne who played the shot down to mid-on, runs with the shot, and Cummins nails the stumps
it was well,
direct.
It was Welalago, but it was more like it was the momentum it was building at the time. Like it was, I think Aaron Finch might have been the guy on telly at the time talking through the technical piece to that. Again, it's harder than it looks on TV, charging at full pace at a ball that's almost on the half volley and throwing in the same motion. And we've seen Cummins do that before, famously. Yep. To Jiteshwar Pujara at Adelaide Oval in 2018. Great fielder, great ground fielder. But, you know, it just kept the momentum going. And you don't want to, like, miss a chance like that mid-collapse. You want to keep them under your heel. And that's what they were able to do so successfully either side of that rain break.
Yeah, so 209 all out, which is a score that Australia should have felt confident about chasing. More confident after they get 15 off the first over. With Lahira Kumara came into the team, his first game of the tournament. There was another change as well. Sri Lanka's captain's gone for the tournament. Dustin Shanaka's out of the whole thing. So Shanaka Karunaratne, the all-rounder, has come into the squad and into the 11. But yeah, 15 off that first over, including Warner playing one of those up and under flip pull shots that he played that went higher than it did long, like it went soaring up into the air. And then the second over's a maiden from Madashankar, the left armer, swinging it in. Third over, Tikshana bowls that and it goes for 9. And the fourth over's a maiden as well, but it's a double wicket maiden. How many players have knocked over David Warner and Steve Smith in a double wicket maiden in their careers? I'm tipping not many. So extraordinary, you know, getting that ball to swing. He gets the left-hander hit in front of leg stump and it's going on to clip. So that one's given. Again, it's Joel, isn't it, giving that one out, and Warner was filthy with that. It was hitting leg stump, Dave, sorry. And then Steve Smith's one, he didn't even review. Like, very rare to get a Steve Smith LBW that he doesn't review, but he misses a lot more balls at hitting his stumps these days, or hitting his pads, Steve Smith. So he was gone for naught, and at that point they had an opening.
Yeah, so Madashankar created the pressure so quickly. So there was 15 runs from the first over. If you're bowling over number two, you're already under the pump before you've sent the delivery down. The fact that his first 12 balls were scoreless, double wicket maiden you refer to, could have got Smith earlier in the over. Smith had to jam his bat down, just kept out a ball that was his change-up, the one that hits the seam and moves from the right-hander. His stock delivery being the sort of left arm swinging into the pads, Chamindavas-esque. It was hard not to draw that comparison watching him bowl today, Madashankar, who was brilliant. Across the first 10 overs of the power play, Madashankar took 2 for 14, at the off five, at the other end, none for 50. So there were two different games going on. It was a game of ends, and Marsh was making the most of it. Just to go back to Warner for a moment here, that first shot, Tom Miles wrote to me and said, that reminds me of Mal Loy in the 06-07 one-day series in Australia. I think we've talked about that on Storytime before, but that like standing pull shot that he was playing off Kumara, who's pretty quick, you know. Kumara can get it up there around 145 clicks on a good day. So the guts of Warner to play that shot, the bravery to play it, and to come out aggressively as they did. Mitchell Marsh lifting over the top of mid-off first ball of the innings. He got out that way against South Africa. It is a mode of dismissal for him from time to time, but with those straight arms, it's also kind of his best shot. So it's a bit like, I don't know, James Vince. He gets out caught in the cordon a lot, or at least he used to, but it's often playing his cover drive, his best stroke. So it applies for Mitchell Marsh playing a shot like that too. But yeah, it felt to me like because Australia knew they had some net run rate to deal with, they had a bit of a problem there, they came out batting more aggressively than otherwise would have been the case. They end up finishing it in over 36. But yeah, Marsh and Warner in that just couple of overs together. Mm. I know Warner only gets 11 from 6 balls. I did think he was a bit unlucky on the leg before, given the ball did keep low a little bit. And you know, it hit him on the edge of the pad with the angle on the left armour. It just clipped leg stump. Yeah. Most of those go the way of the batsman, but Smith, yeah, there was no doubt that was hitting middle stump halfway up. And then they were grateful to have Marnus Labuschagne there, Jeff. I mean, I know we've spoken a lot about where Labuschagne fits in his 50-over team. You know, will he get ultimately replaced by Travis Head with Smith staying in the side? Well, I don't think it's a clear-cut, surefire thing that it's going to be Labuschagne that leaves. I know he doesn't bat at a particularly high tempo, but you can trust his defence. And if you need to get out of a jam, he's not a bad glue guy to, you know, jam glue, whatever. Wow. But Labuschagne is a guy who is in pretty good nick. So, you know, if they have to make a tough call about someone dropping out, I mean, I don't think it's open and shut that it's Smith over Labuschagne.
He did a job that he needed to do today. The point, when he went from 10 to 31, he did it all in singles.
Yes.
And then he hit a two. So he really played that role. But Marsh had allowed him to do that. I thought the way Marsh played was less about thinking about net run rate and more about the fact it was easier to score off the new ball potentially. Mm. And it would be harder to hit those shots as the ball got older and softer. So he went after that new ball. He didn't have to chase it though. He got fed enough width. He got to play that sort of cut shot, that chopping shot down behind point that he plays. He got to get the pull shot out once or twice, and he got to boom drives down the ground and through cover. He is so clean when he hits the ball at the moment. He's just about my favourite striker of a cricket ball to watch. It just feels good because the contact feels so sweet when he nails it. So yeah, 50 for him. That's his highest World Cup score for what it's worth, because he hadn't gone past the 20s before. And then Inglis making his career high score as well. He'd made an even 50 once before, but goes on to 58 by the time he was out of 59 balls. That was important. So he was streaky early, edged a couple from the spinners along the ground past slip, but soon got himself in and was willing to up the tempo and let Labuschagne do the single. There was a period there for, I think, 7 overs running. Labuschagne faced the first ball of the over and got a single from it. So he turned that strike over really well. Inglis was able to push them through. And so, you know, by the time he got out, they were pretty much close enough that it would have been very hard to lose the game from there.
All you could do if you're Inglis in a situation like that is do, and by that I mean being brought in for Alex Carey, is make sure you're not dropped after two games. He did drop a catch off Maxwell early today, and you know, you can. We've already touched on the leg before shout, and he hasn't looked as clean as Carey does, to be blunt. So he's got to lift his weight with the bat. They've let him bat at 5. I think they want Maxwell still in a 6-7, which makes sense given the power they have to negate any boundary riders and so on. And Inglis having a more traditional game plan at the moment, anyway. 58 from 59, hit one big six on the pull, 5 boundaries, a couple of those from his first two deliveries. One of those was a thick edge. Yeah, it took him a while to settle. It felt like he was skittish for the first 20 or so balls, but once he found his sea legs, batting with Labuschagne, did his job, made sure they were within striking distance of a quick kill by the time that Maxwell and Stoinis arrived, and they only faced 31 balls between them for 51 unbeaten, and that's exactly what Australia needs. So Maxwell hit his 130th six in one-day cricket tonight. He overtook Aaron Finch, 129. He's one away from Shane Watson. They were talking about that in the TV box, and only Gilchrist and Ponting ahead of him. It's just a reminder that, you know, that's what Maxwell does, right? He hit sixes, bombed a couple of them tonight in one over, hit 4 fours. His first 6 scoring shots were all boundaries, and then Stoinis only facing 10 deliveries, but finishing it with a 6. And I thought that was good as well. Like, anyone that pays attention to net run rate knows that if the scores are level, you try and hit a 6. It's like that marginal gain stuff that we often talk about on the pod, and Stoinis was clearly aware of that because he tried to hit both of those balls when scores were level for 6. Not for 1, but for 6, knowing they only needed the single, right? So credit to Stoinis for that, who gets himself into the tournament as well after copping a dodgy decision in his first game back a couple of days ago. So, yeah, the batting side of things, with the exception of Smith getting out early and Warner getting a 50-50 decision going against him, for everybody else, they've played a role. And, you know, like it was in 1999, Jeff, you've got to find these historical reference points when teams have a bad start. Even if you want to say the T20 World Cup of 2021, they got absolutely annihilated by England in the group stage, ended up winning that trophy. So it's far from without precedent. England got beaten by Ireland at the MCG last year, washed out against Australia, had a scratchy win against Sri Lanka, and won the tournament at the G. So teams, you want to play your best cricket at the end. You just got to make sure you keep winning. And, well, it's a habit, isn't it? So they're in it now, and they have a huge game against Pakistan next up.
They're up and running, and Pakistan might be a bit flat after the India debacles. So, you know, Australia should fancy themselves to try to knock them off there. And the fast finish from Maxwell was exhilarating. Aaron Finch was just finishing up a radio spot as Maxwell came into bat, and as he left the box, he just said, whatever happens now, it's going to happen quickly.
Yes, yes.
You know, versus Tikshana, it was like either Maxwell's going to try to smash everything he bowls or he's going to be out second ball. It was the former. Phil Long was pointing out that Maxwell's strike rate in World Cup matches is he's over 500 runs in World Cups at a strike rate of over 150, which nobody else even comes close to. So he's done it multiple World Cups running, and he did it again tonight.
Yeah.
But I think that's probably a good point for us to get to the final word, Hall of Fame.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Why not? The final word Hall of Fame is brought to you, Jeff, it won't surprise you to learn, by Westfield London and Westfield Stratford City. You might have heard of them. Play more and pay less with Westfield London Extra Pass, and you could win a 100 quid voucher. No, gift card, I should say, not voucher. Just for signing up, collect virtual stickers every time you spend £25 at a participating retailer. Earn increasing discounts with each sticker. And it's another way to enter the grand prize draw. So, the more runs you hit at sixes, the more walls you scale at city bouldering. I don't think I'm going to be doing any rock climbing soon. It feels like the sort of thing where I could get very much hurt. And the more cats you pet at Java Whiskers, the more chances you have to win. You know, we spoke about this the other day, Jeff, and said that Winnie wants to go to a cat cafe.
Yep.
It was brought to my attention very, very quickly by our Discord community that for Java Whispers, you need to be 11 years of age. So don't get any ideas taking toddlers to a cat cafe. That'll end badly. But all you need to do is Google Westfield London, follow the prompts to sign up for the Westfield London Extra Pass. T's and C's apply. Prize draw only applies to UK residents. Westfield London and Stratford City, more extra, less ordinary. Jeff, what was your final word moment of the day?
Well, just a quick one that I remembered before I get to the other one. Obviously, we have to talk about Mitchell Starc in the first over, threatening to man-cad Pereira. Yeah. And then in the third over, threatening to do it again when he was actually in his crease that time, but I assume had wandered out the previous delivery. You can't give two warnings. If you've given one warning, okay, you shouldn't even give one warning. You should have just taken the bails off and run him out. But if you're going to waste your time giving one, why give a second one? Like, just do it. At some point, you're flirting with the idea. I know you're curious. I know, Mitchell, you're curious. You're thinking about it. You're a little intimidated. You're not sure if this is where you want to go with your life. Is that really you? But you're curious. You want to have a go. You're never going to know until you do it. You won't know what it feels like until you try it for the first time. Just whip them off. Just whip them off and see where it takes you.
It's just on this, right? I mean, you lose the moral World Cup anyway for stopping. You're already copping shit from the anti-man-cab brigade for even considering it in the first place. You may as well go the whole hog and whip the bails off. And then, if you choose to withdraw the appeal, okay, that's a whole different thing. But, yeah, this holding the ball over the stumps bullshit, I'm done with it. Starkey, do it at some point. Mm. Do it soon. I still think this World Cup,
commit.
As we get closer to... as games get closer, and surely they will, we haven't had a close game in the whole tournament yet, and we're into... Yeah, what is it, 14 or 15 games played? We'll get there eventually, but I think we will see one at some stage. What did I have here for Hall of Fame today? How about Michael Clarke declaring boldly on his radio show this morning that he'd heard Pat Cummins was being dropped, only for Pat Cummins to have his best game of the tournament? I quite enjoyed that. We'll come back to that on the 17th of December. Stark with the sleeves. So he went from gold against India to green against South Africa, back to gold today. Kind of reminded me of when Dermot Burton, to use another 80s footy reference, would change his boots at halftime to the green boots and how he thought that had some luck to it. I did it for a couple of seasons, but yeah, I want to see Stark doing that next. Start with the gold, go off the field for a little massage, for a little rub, and come back with the green ones for his second spell. That's the natural extension of what he's been doing so far.
Yeah, well, like the Australian team, green has been dropped for this match and fortunes have turned around. I'm just going to go with what a weird day it was here at this ground. We had clear skies to start with. We had a random rain break.
Yeah.
Then we had some kind of dust storm. It wasn't quite a sandstorm. It wasn't quite dickadoo, 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 but it was like all of this kind of stuff was swirling through because this wind picked up, and then the wind really tore through the place and like ripped down all of the ICC cladding that was around the top of the stand and started dropping it on people's heads. So they evacuated the bottom of the stands. The signage was falling off. The ICC is putting out statements saying nobody was hurt. It was a weird old day. It felt like some cranky weather gods were up to something.
I did think for a moment or two, what if the match officials and the ICC arrive at the view that the venue is not fit to continue playing this game and Australia missed the chance of chasing 210 in a game they had to win? Didn't quite play out that way, but yeah, it did look a little bit chaotic. And I did put up, you know, on Twitter, Darude stops play, and that would have been funny had it actually been the case, and it could have ended up in Wisden next year or something along those lines. You wouldn't have seen this, Jeff, because you're there, but on television they kept returning to the Sri Lankan mascot every time they lost a wicket in the crowd, who was looking more and more desolate, hands over his eyes and so on. So, you know, there isn't much for the cameras to pan to. It was another dreadful crowd today. I don't know how many you reckon were there, Jeff.
7,000.
7,000, and that's the official number, right? So it's nowhere near 7 in reality, because they're clearly making those numbers up at the moment. So, yeah, even if it is 7, which it isn't, that's nowhere near what the crowd should be for a game like this at a World Cup. We've banged on about that before, but it's just worth noting. So, yeah, in the absence of lots and lots of people to cross to, they find one or two and they go back to them all the time. The guy in the Port Adelaide jumper who got a great run against South Africa and did again today in the Sri Lanka mascot. He'll have better days than this, Jeff. And that is, I believe, the end of the Final Word Hall of Fame, and therefore the end of the segment for Westfield London, Westfield Stratford City. More extra, less ordinary. We have a game tomorrow that I am going to be covering with Cam Ponsonby. I cannot remember who it is. Maybe you can, Jeff. It's the nature of this tournament. It goes so quickly.
That's a great question. Who is playing tomorrow? I'm on a flight during that match to go to Chennai to do the New Zealand-Afghanistan game the following day. So it has momentarily slipped
why
my mind.
Why don't I find out? No, I'll tell you.
Is it the South Africa-Netherlands one?
It's the grudge match from Adelaide Oval that we did last year, Jeff. It's South Africa playing the Netherlands. The next Australian game is against Pakistan on Friday at the mighty Chinnaswamy. We talked about VFL Park earlier. We've got the VFL Park floodlights there at the Chinnaswamy. And the next game Sri Lanka plays also against the Dutch. And that is at Lucknow. So they get to spend a week or so at Lucknow before playing on Saturday. Yep. Jeff, you've just spent a week in Lucknow. Leaving the city. What would be your recommendation to the Sri Lankans who have a stretch ahead of them? What were the high points for you?
Well, you have to take a little tour to the old town. There's some beautiful old buildings here. The high point is just to get in a tuk-tuk with Bharat Sundaresan and have him say, we're going to find somewhere to eat at about 10:30 at night. 3 hours later, you will be back to your hotel. You may have eaten. It's possible that has happened in the intervening 3 hours. Who knows? But you will see a lot of roads.
All right, Cam and me tomorrow. Thank you, Jeff. Travel well. Australia on the board in this World Cup. We'll do it all again tomorrow. Night-night.
Good night.
Protected, brother, I ain't fenced in. And my future questions, my current senses, that'd be the same we've been doing for centuries. Sorry if I ran out to empty, broke this, so you know what I meant here. I had to go.